In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Well, that's certainly a relief. I'm glad it's over. Oh, that was 5 years ago. Oh, Jesus God. Happy Mission Accomplished Day, Two Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the NOVAM Radio Network. Are we done yet? We're still there? Oh, we're still there. Wasn't this month just past April? What do we have? 56 more Americans dead. And as the occupation commanders have said over and over again, we don't count dead Iraqis, so there's no way of knowing that number. Dana Too Much Cappuccino Perino had some outrageous comments about the fifth anniversary of Codpiece Day. I think she said it yesterday. We'll share that with you a little bit later. And also, we're going to take a look at some of the comments made by the Iraq War's pundits and supporters early on, thanks to FAIR.org, who compiled this list of comments from everybody from Judy Woodruff to Lou Dobbs to Chris Matthews to Alan Combs. So stick around for that, Truth Seekers. Regarding Iran, let's start tonight with, Uncle Mike's Story Corner tonight, too. Another example of how an occupying power can denigrate the people who consider it to be their country. And I'm talking about the occupied territories in Israel, so stick around for that. Prairie 2 writes, Mike, the Bush crime family is doing so much saber-rattling over Iran that it's possible they're just bluffing. The reason they might want to keep this up is to maintain the price of oil. The Fed has been agonizing over the prospect of deflation spreading from the housing market. Commodity markets did take a 10% drop a few weeks ago, but rallied back with the infusion of more Fed money. If deflation were to take hold, it would be a fiery plunge to the bottom. They really want to put this off until after the election. The effects of economic collapse would be just as bad domestically as war with Iran, or worse. So they may choose war anyway. The American economy and infrastructure has been hollowed out to a brittle shell, and the cracks are spreading. Collapse is beyond stopping anymore. The only question is how bad it gets and who grabs power during the chaos. Do we get FDR or Father Coughlin? WPA or brown shirts? Fireside chats or book burning? This time around, we do have more to fear than fear itself. The U.S. military, the head commander, Mike Mullen, Navy Admiral, the Joint Chiefs, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Mike Mullen, said that the transition to a new president in wartime concerns the military. They are concerned. In the Washington Post, today it's reported that Mike Mullen warned that the transition to a new American president will mark what he calls a time of vulnerability as the U.S. fights two wars. And he said military leaders are already actively preparing for this changing of the guard. He said the U.S. political transition after the election will be, in his words, extraordinarily challenging. Really? It is and never has been before. How many times have we had changes of leadership during wartime or changes of administrations? Let's see. We went from regarding Vietnam, we went from Kennedy to Johnson to Nixon to Ford. Was there this concern then? Huh? Well, I don't know. Mullen said Iran is not going away. We need to be strong and really in the deterrent mode. We need to be not very predictable. He was speaking on the very day when Pentagon officials announced that second U.S. Aircraft carrier group, USS Lincoln, had arrived in the Persian Gulf for now what's being called a brief overlap with another carrier. Huh, really? Just a brief? Lieutenant General Carter Ham, the Joint Staff Operations Chief, said having two carriers in the Gulf will provide additional air power for strikes and reconnaissance in the combat zone, giving commanders added flexibility. I guess they're talking about Iraq, aren't they? He also said it allows us to demonstrate to our friends and allies in the region a commitment to security in the region. Security. Now, Defense Secretary Gates also said yesterday that this USS Lincoln, this aircraft carrier battle group, could serve as a, quote, reminder, end quote, to Iran. But Gates said the presence of this battle group is part of a regular fluctuation of U.S. Navy ships in the region and does not mark an escalation of force. It does not mark an escalation of force at all. Only going to be there for a while. Slight overlap. Mullen, in this interview with the Washington Post editors and reporters yesterday, said Iran is continuing to supply weapons, training, and financing. Oh, it's all of that now. Weapons, training, and financing to insurgents not only in Iraq, but, oh my, also in Afghanistan. So it's you notice the rhetorical creep here. First it was, well, they're sending components into Iraq to build IEDs to kill our soldiers. Then it was, well, they're fueling and funding the insurgency in Basra. And it keeps escalating now. Now it's up to the point where Iran is supplying weapons, training, and financing. And not only to insurgents in Iraq, but also Afghanistan. Oh, my God. And probably Iran is also funding terrorists in, I don't know where. Cuba. No. Venezuela. What? It's amazing, isn't it? So we can all relax. That extra carrier battle group that's in the Persian Gulf this evening is only there temporarily. It's only a normal overlap. And, of course, nobody said they're going to be leaving, but I guess that's the implication. Now, regarding elections and the transition from corruption, filth, dishonor, and the whoredom that Cheney and Bush have brought to this country, and replace that with, who knows, with the Democratic president, Mullen said the transition is unlikely to be smooth. Huh? Unlikely to be smooth. He said he hopes to offer, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, he hopes to offer a stabilizing influence who will bridge two administrations. He, Mullen, an unelected military officer, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has taken it upon himself to offer a stabilizing influence. What does this mean? He went on to say, quote, we will be tested. I'm preparing that this country will be tested. And I have a role in that regard, certainly providing advice to whoever the new president's going to be, end quote. Well, okay. See, when you add all these pieces together about Iran, just reflexively you reach for the closet where you have your tinfoil hat, and then you put it on because it's conspiracy time, and it makes some of the weak sisters out there say, oh, but wait a minute, it looks to me like, no, it couldn't be. it looks to me like there's going to be a war and maybe a military takeover, you know, just to keep things stable. No, couldn't be. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. They classify them facts, expose them, secret agents, tax them for the wealthy, leave another poor behind. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider. Cuckoo.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden, talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider.
We're still at war. It's in our country's interest to find those who would do harm to us and get them out of harm's way.
It's about 21 past the hour. Tim Russert has taken offense to something that Arianna Huffington has in her new book and has decided to ban her from NBC News. Really? I didn't know. Gee, he can do that? Maybe since I worked for Nova M Radio, maybe I can ban people too. What do you think? Maybe Randy can. Is Tim on the board of NBC? I don't know. According to wherever I got this, Arianna Huffington has run up against the impenetrable wall that is Tim Russert's ego. Huffington is out on tour. She's got a new book out titled Right is Wrong, How the Lunatic Fringe Hijacked America, Shredded the Constitution, and Made Us All Less Safe. Now, she's booked to appear on CNN, ABC, and CBS. She was booked to appear with this creepy little bastard on Morning Joe, Joe Scarborough, and on Countdown with Keith Olbermann, both on MSNBC. Those bookings were suddenly canceled. She's not going to be on NBC or MSNBC on Keith Olbermann's program or Joe Scarborough's program. NBC has confirmed that Huffington will not be booked on any NBC-affiliated show to promote her book, but they refused to explain why. And word has it that this is Tim Russert's doing. Russert is out for revenge because Huffington, in her book, calls him a conventional wisdom zombie. That's pretty much right on target, just like a lot of what Jeremiah Wright said was pretty much right on target. Conventional wisdom zombie, I like that. And she devotes 7 pages to ripping Russert's ass for allowing his Meet the Press guests to go unchallenged. So apparently, media whore number one got his feelings hurt and has decided to take his dollies and marbles and go home, and to make sure that Arianna Huffington can't play on his network. Well, isn't that something? You notice how this just keeps escalating. You don't like what somebody says? Get them off the air. Somebody says something that is offensive to you? Censor them. Whether it's true or not, whether it's witty or not, whether it has basis in fact or not, get them off the air. Reduce the number of opinions out there, because it just confuses people. Tim Russert, what a pansy ass. What an absolute little wimp. Well, Arianna Huffington said nice bad things about me, so I will make sure that she will not be on this network. Okay. John McCain yesterday blames the bridge collapse in Minnesota that took the lives of 13 people. On wasted money for pork barrel spending. Not money that is flowing into the pockets of corrupt contractors who are personal friends with Dick Cheney regarding the war in Iraq. Not that absolute tsunami of money. No, 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 no. It's because, you know, the earmarks, so-called, in Congress. That's what killed all those people. Now, forget what the federal investigators said. The federal investigators said undersized steel plates. In other words, whoever built the bridge cheated. Undersized steel plates was the critical, or were the critical factors in the collapse of the bridge. In addition to the 13 people killed, almost 150 were injured. But McCain, in Pennsylvania, told reporters, quote, "The bridge in Minneapolis, my friends, didn't collapse, my friends, because there wasn't enough money, my friends. The bridge in Minnesota collapsed because so much money was spent on wasteful, unnecessary pork barrel projects." Really, John? Is that what it was? Nothing about the refusal on the part of the Bush administration. Oh, let me change that. The refusal on the part of Republicans in... Oh, you're one, aren't you, John? The refusal on the part of Republicans to allocate funds to take care of this nation's collapsing infrastructure had nothing to do with the hundreds of billions of dollars that we have sent into this black hole known as Iraq so that we can kill and torture and make a few war profiteers extremely rich. No, not that, John. That wasn't the reason. Not the steel plates that the bridge contractor put on the bridge that were undersized, and the bridge contractor goddamn knew it since he was a, or the company was a certified bridge engineering company. No, 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 no. None of that, right, John? It's that wasteful spending. Primarily by Democrats. Right, John? Any piece of human waste that will use a national tragedy to make a political point that isn't even based in fact needs to be shown the door where it concerns his little toy presidential run. Don't you think?
Left out? Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
It's about 25 before the hour. Newsflash, newsflash. Today, John McCain retracted his statement about the bridge collapse being coming about as a result of no money. He changed his mind completely. He was in Cleveland today, and he said, "No, I said it. It would have received a higher priority, which it deserved." Well, that statement is in contrast with what he said yesterday. Yesterday, he said the bridge in Minneapolis didn't collapse because there wasn't enough money. The bridge in Minneapolis collapsed because so much money was spent on wasteful, unnecessary pork barrel projects. Well, John, that doesn't, I don't hear the word higher or the word priority or the word deserved anywhere in that compound sentence. I just don't hear it. I guess it's me. Democrats had blasted this jackass because he politicized a tragedy that killed 13 people and injured 150 others. Even Republican Senator Norm Coleman of Minnesota said McCain was wrong. Coleman said during a conference call with reporters, quote, "The bridge didn't collapse because there wasn't enough money," end quote. Coleman said, quote, "In this instance, I simply think he's wrong if he somehow ties the collapse of the bridge to a funding issue. Let's get the full data," end quote. This is, I mean, and you really want McCain I mean, you Barack supporters or you Hillary supporters, are you really serious that if your candidate doesn't get the Democratic nomination, you're going to vote for this psychopath? Are you really? Okay, well, let me get it said. Shame on you. You are dumb as dirt. You're going to do it that way, huh? Okay, well, you'll show that Hillary Clinton, won't you? You'll show that Barack Obama. You're going to vote for John McCain. No, better yet, I'll just stay home. Okay, fine, that's fine. And interesting comments out there on the net about when will the news media require John McCain to disown the crazies in his campaign? Huh? Barack Obama, every time Jeremiah Wright farts, Barack Obama is supposed to reach for bathroom tissue. It's incredible. Obama has denounced and disowned Wright. He's absolutely tossed him under the bus. He's tried to back off, get away, ick, ooh, stay away from me, Jeremiah. The Washington Post said, quote, in an editorial, said, "We don't see how anyone can question his, Barack's, commitment to transcending old racial battles and finding common ground. The Reverend Wright doesn't speak for the candidate, and we hope the pastor doesn't become a continuing excuse for political ads built on racial fears," end quote. Oh, really? You really hope that, Washington Post? Okay, well, your heart's in the right place, but your mind is probably, stuck up one of your body orifices. They're not going to let Barack Obama escape from this. Hillary isn't. Certainly McCain isn't. Come on. New York Times, in an editorial, said, quote, "It was the most forthright repudiation of an out-of-control supporter that we can remember." McCain, Obama distancing himself from Jeremiah Wright. So all of this is going on. It brings up the question, when will the news media require John McCain to denounce and disown the racist and bigoted supporters in his campaign? When do you think that'll happen? Arizona Blue Meanie, writing at arizona.typepad.com, Arizona Blue Meanie's blog, says, "When will McCain renounce his association with and disown a white supremacist named Richard Quinn, who was hired by McCain as a political advisor in 2000 and believed to still be an advisor to his campaign, after this guy, Quinn, openly praised Klansman David Duke?" Quinn called him a maverick. "He sells T-shirts praising the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. And he writes for a magazine called Southern Partisan," oh, I know it well, "that claimed slave owners really weren't all that bad. This is one of McCain's buddies." Arizona Blue Meanie goes on, "When will McCain renounce and disown the endorsement of Pastor John Hagee, whose endorsement was actively pursued and sought by McCain?" This is a guy who vomits up virulent hate speech against Catholics. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Hagee also has said that God will send terrorists to create a bloodbath in the U.S. to punish us if we support a two-state solution in Israel-Palestine. Holy jumping God, really, John? Hagee, is that what's going to happen? God is going to send, what, angels on fire with swords? And what are they going to do, lop off our heads? That would cause a bloodbath if we support a two-state solution in Israel and Palestine? Really? Son of a bitch. How do you know that, Hagee? And this freak Hagee has also called for a preemptive military strike against Iran to fulfill biblical prophecy and bring about the rapture and the second coming of his bloody, degenerate Christ. Hey, this is insane. Not strike against Iran because they're supporting terrorists. Not strike against Iran because they've decided not to trade their oil and dollars anymore. Not to strike against Iran because they're becoming a regional power that may threaten U.S. Hegemony. No, none of that. Strike against Iran to fulfill biblical prophecy and please Jesus and make Jesus up in heaven smile and say, "Oh, look, 6 million more dead and so many of them babies and old ladies. Oh, Pastor John, I'm coming back. You've done it. You have given me the blood bubbling, stinking sacrifice I want. Is that John Hagee's Jesus? Apparently it is. When will McCain renounce and disown that monstrous freak? When will he renounce and disown Pastor Rod Parsley, who McCain has called his spiritual guide? Sounds a little bit like Barack Obama and Jeremiah Wright, doesn't it, huh? Rod Parsley. Parsley has said that the government of the U.S., by funding Planned Parenthood, is complicit in genocide against African Americans. Oh. Parsley is another one of those apocalyptic end-timers who's called for Christians to wage a war against the false religion of Islam, to destroy Islam. Ah! So Jesus will be happy with all the corpses and come back. Hi, boys. Lovely job. Thank you. Thank you. So, oops, almost fell down there. There's so much blood down here on planet Earth. Well, you boys did a good job. Here, let me rapture you. Oh, my God. Now, McCain, remember, 6 years ago, McCain labeled the late Jerry Falwell as a political agent of intolerance. Remember that? Remember that? But when McCain decided to run for president again, remember what he did? He just groveled like a whipped dog in front of Falwell and delivered a commencement address at Liberty University. Hi, my friends. I didn't mean any of that, my friends. I was under stress, my friends. You know, I'm married to a woman 18 years younger than I am, my friends. She insisted we get it on the night before, my friends, and I was out of Cialis, and my friends, there was nothing I could do, so I lurched out at you, Falwell. I didn't mean it, Your Reverend Holiness, honor you. I know that you're a true believer in the blessed Lamb of Christ, or however you say that. I don't know. I've been in church for a long time. But I need your endorsement, Rev. Please, okay? Please? How many times has Barack Obama had to distance himself from a man whose comments were 95% of the time absolutely correct? And the 5% when they weren't correct is only not correct from a white man's point of view. Mine. May have been perfectly correct from a black man's point of view. His. But because white people are terrified of a uppity, out-of-control Negro, oh, my God, we can't have that in the White House. Next thing you know, at the presidential inaugural ball, they'll have rappers. Ah! So what did white America decide? That for some reason, Jeremiah Wright is a maniac, but Rod Parsley and Pastor Hagee are just good old Christians. They're just preaching the gospel of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. All that stuff about blood and murder and war. Well, boys, that's just part of it. You. Jeremiah Wright, being the performer that he is, seizing his the 15 minutes allocated to him by, that white-haired pop artist so long ago, pushes the envelope and white America collapses. It just wets its pants. It just loses its bowels. White America goes absolutely insane. Eek! Yikes! A Negro! Yeah! Woo! 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 They just go crazy. But you see, Pastor John Hagee is a rotund white man, and Rod Parsley is a white something. I don't know. Is he a man? I don't know. Is he human? I have no idea. When will John McCain have to disavow these freaks? Quick answer, never.
Range On. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Yeah, white America has always been terrified of a forceful, strong, whether we're talking physical or psychological or personality, whatever, black man. Always just terrified. So along comes someone like Barack Obama, who, you know, with his cool, sophisticated Ivy League approach, this is something white America has never seen before. They've never seen anything like this before. You go to white America and say, what's your impression of the typical black politician? Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, you know, and beyond that, they're kind of lost. Rangel, who's he? I don't know. It's hard. I get, but you send up Barack Obama, sophisticated man who is okay. I guess in this country we call him a black man. I don't know why we don't call him a white man. You know, his mama was white, his daddy was black. Oh, that's right. This is the one drop rule country. Never mind. One drop of colored blood, and you are a whatever. So here comes Barack Obama, sophisticated as hell, cool, hip, appealing to educated people, young people. Oh my God, no! And all the rednecks, all the white people, some of whom aren't rednecks, they're just ignorant. They don't know what to do. Like, oh my God, what's going on? Look at this Negro. Ah! What are we going to do? Lash him to Jeremiah Wright, because we understand Jeremiah. See, white people understand Jeremiah Wright. They can look at Jeremiah Wright. Here's what white people say. They look at Jeremiah Wright and listen, and they go, see? That's right. That's what I told you. You give him an inch. See? That's right. This was brilliant on the part of the Clinton campaign. They're the ones that booked Jeremiah Wright into the National Press Club, right? You didn't know that? What'd you think? Some member of the National Press Club said, hey, let's have a little fun. Let's book Jeremiah Wright. But in the meantime, what is the difference between Reverend Wright's comments and the comments of these white preachers who support John McCain? Big difference. Reverend Wright was pretty much telling the truth. And Pastor Hagee and Pastor Parsley and the white racist who said that, what's his name? David Duke was just a maverick. He's just a maverick. You know, David Duke who wants to fry Jews in the fat from Negroes. Oh, he's just a maverick. Has John McCain got to apologize for that? No. Of course not. And you know why? Because as much of a freak as McCain is, as much of a hidden, closeted psychopath, as much of a two-faced, double-dealing liar as he is, do you know why America doesn't hold him to the same standard? Because he's white! This is America. This is the United States of America. This is where it took acts of Congress to guarantee the black children would get the same education as white children. Look how that turned out, huh? And what does this say about the inherent biases of the so-called news media in this country? The fact that every time you turned around there for about 2-3 weeks, it's starting to abate just a little bit, just a tiny bit, but it'll still show up. There he is, Jeremiah Wright. Oh. How many times have you seen replays and replays and replays of Pastor John Hagee talking about, well, let's invade Iran so Jesus will be happy with the corpses and come down and rapture all of us up to heaven? How many times you see that? I'm waiting. Ah, I don't see any hands going up. Oh, okay. None. You see, white America does not know how to react to a Barack Obama. Doesn't know how to do it. But we damn sure know how to react to Jeremiah Wright.
oh, Lord, do we know how to react to Jeremiah, right?
And that's what this is all about, True Seeker. That's all. It's all about white people's fear. Eek! What if Barack Obama gets elected president, Martha, and all of a sudden starts talking in that Negro way of talking that I can't understand? I you know, I'm on the bus or on the train, and I listen to the brown people around me talking, and I can't understand what they're saying. I don't know. They might be sitting there talking about how they want to rob me and come home and rape you and take all my money. What am I going to do, Martha, if we elect Barack Obama? Oh, he's nice, and he talks good, and his wife is kind of, oh, I don't know, she didn't look a thing like Auntie Jemima, but I don't know what to do because I can't understand them. I don't know what they are saying. Oh, I understand Barack, but what if he gets elected and all of a sudden goes like this? Yeah, man, but we're on to be you wow with him. Yeah, and I'm sitting there going, oh, Jesus, Martha, what is he saying? Well, the boom, ba, yeah, do that, Mom. I don't know what that means, Martha. Oh, my God. And that's what it sounds like to me. I've never taken the time to learn Negro. I don't know how to speak it. What did Rush call it all those years ago, Martha? Ebonics. I don't know how to do that. Oh, Lord. Let's vote for McCain. Oh, it's crazy. Do you have any doubt that what I just said is not the absolute truth about this media meltdown on Jeremiah Wright? They're terrified. They all go to work in the morning and they look at the overnight video of Jeremiah Wright and they all stand there and wet their pants and they go, oh, Lord. We got to do something. Barack Obama's going to get in office and start saying things we don't understand. Ah! Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio. My name is Mike Malloy. I guess I got a little carried away there, but, you know, it's the truth. You know, I've been white all my life. Well, predominantly white. And I've watched this starting way back when I was a kid. I could never figure out what, you know, and until I got old enough to start reading slave literature. I don't mean literature written by slaves, but literature written about the necessity of keeping the black man down and destroying black families, you know, shipping people over here and shipping people over, you know, it took a while, but eventually, plus I had a whole series of black friends, I guess, who took pity on me and said, well, this white boy seems like he wants to learn, so let's just, you know, open up his head a little bit. But, and you know, I'm grateful for that. Plus, I'm not the dimmest bulb in the marquee, so some of the stuff you can figure out on your own, trust me. But all that stuff about Pastor Hagee and Rod Parsley and McCain versus Jeremiah Wright and Barack Obama, my God, I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen, you know, all the the swift boat people who are laying in the bushes like so much elephant droppings just waiting to see if Barack Obama gets the Democratic nomination so they can then bring out the heavy guns. They're just sitting back going, by God, you know what? The white news media in this country has done our job for us here in this phase of the Destroy Barack Obama campaign. We don't even have to get into A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the stuff they've got waiting in the bushes along with the elephant dung that they're all wallowing in. They don't have, you know, they're just pleased as punch. Every day. Every day. How long has it been? A month? 2 months? So, yeah, I get a little bit carried away about that. I really do because, I don't know, I guess it just pisses me off. Just like the brutal treatment of Palestinians by the Israelis pisses me off. You know, there's a couple of issues there that just irritate me to the point where I've just got to vent, got to let it out. Newsflash, Southern Methodist University has rejected any connection whatsoever to the Bush Library when this rat bastard leaves office. Reverend Andrew Weaver, Reverend Dr. Andrew Weaver, introduced this resolution. I hereby petition the UMC General Conference, that's the United Methodist Church General Conference, to prevent leasing, selling, or otherwise participating in or supporting the Presidential Library for George W. Bush at Southern Methodist University. That was the resolution. It went to the committee and passed 51 in favor of keeping this rat bastard off campus, 5 in favor of letting his library have something to do with it, 51-5 against him. And then it went to the general conference, and it was rejected on the floor of the general conference, 844-20. Oh, my God. Oh. I used to be a Methodist, so I'm sort of glad that they did that. Here in Georgia, back in February, there's a small town outside of Savannah, Port Wentworth, and there's a sugar refinery down there, and there was a buildup of sugar dust in the air, and it exploded. 13 refinery workers were killed. Now, how did they die? They died by being burned to death. And some of them, it took a couple of weeks until they died of their burns. So, a Democratic member of Congress, Representative John Barrow, whose district includes the area where this horrendous event occurred, co-sponsored legislation that would require the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration to issue regulations, just regulations for industrial dust that can build up and explode, whether it's sugar dust, concrete dust, whatever it is. George Bush says he's going to veto this if it comes to his desk. He says his administration, quote, has serious concerns with the expedited and one-size-fits-all regulatory approach required by the bill, which will impact as many as 200,000 workplaces in a variety of industries, end quote. Now, Bush didn't say that. Some half-assed jerk who works for Bush said that and then issued it over Bush's statement. But here's an attempt to regulate how much dust can build up in the atmosphere where these people work. How much do you think a sugar refinery worker makes? I will tell you, they start at around $6.75 an hour. The top wage is around $11 an hour, at least here in Georgia. And this filthy, murderous, torture-loving pig in the White House says, no, we're not going to have any of that. Now, to show that intra-species in their contempt for human life, Bush crime family officials for more than a year have blocked a rule aimed at protecting North Atlantic right whales. Now, there's only about 400 of them left, and when they're gone, they're gone. How they've done this, the Bush crime family is challenging the findings of government scientists. That's according to documents obtained by the Union of Concerned Scientists. North Atlantic right whales, about 400 left, are one of the most endangered species on Earth. And scientists have warned that the loss of just one more pregnant female could doom the species. Now, the problem here, shipping companies have opposed this proposal, saying slowing their vessels will cost the industry money. See, in the sections of the North Atlantic, is it the North Atlantic? I guess it's the North Atlantic, where these whales migrate. They have regular routes, just like you and I do as we go to and from the grocery store. They have regular routes. Also happen to be now in shipping lanes. The ships, if they slow down, so the radar will pick up these whales, they can avoid them. But they've decided, nah, slowing down will cost the industry money. Since the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, since NOAA initially proposed a regulation to slow these huge ocean-going vessels down, at least three right whales have died from ship strikes, and two have been wounded by propellers. Now, Cheney is behind this one. Cheney's staff issued a document that says, quote, "We have no evidence that lowering the speeds of large ships will actually make a difference." But NOAA fired back and said, "We have plenty of evidence. Here it is." But once again, science, investigative results, all of this is cast aside in order to just absolutely establish the primacy of corporate America. People, whales, animals, things, pristine wilderness, all of it can go right to goddamn hell. These people don't care. They care about nothing but their insatiable greed and their lust for murder in Dick Cheney's case. Just absolute lust for murder. So, no regulations regarding sugar dust or any kind of industrial dust that might explode and take the lives of, well, in the case here in Georgia, 13 people burned alive. No, we don't need more regulations that would, slow down the production of sugar, which is heavily subsidized in this country by the government. You know that. And as far as whales are concerned, 400 of them left, screw them. Let them all die. We don't care. I hate these people. I mean, I cannot describe to you the depth and the color of the hate I feel for every single member of the Bush crime family, all of them. They're here to destroy America as surely as some alien force or some invader. I hope that they will leave. And if they do not, I will be one of the first ones to the barricades. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
In California, the body counts keep getting higher. It's evil out there, man. That state is always on fire. Everyone is a system, but they can't seem to win. Even Bob Geldof looks alarmingly thin. I got to get on that shuttle, get me out of this place. But there's gonna be warfare up there in outer space. It's been a hard day on the planet. How much is it all worth? It's getting harder to understand it. Things are tough all over on Earth.
Go gently into that good night. Rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Do you really believe that Deborah Jane Palfrey, the so-called DC madam, hanged herself today? Do you really believe that? Huh? Or do you believe that it was just a staged murder? Huh? See, this is the kind of America we live in now. This was the woman who was found guilty of money laundering, using the mail for illegal purposes, and racketeering because she ran, allegedly, although she denied it, a prostitution ring in D.C. that was strictly for the use of high-end people, politicians, in that city. Police said Deborah Jean Palfrey left at least two suicide notes So there you are. She was found hanging from the ceiling of a shed behind her mother's house. Nylon rope around her neck. Her mother discovered the body. Her mother discovered her daughter hanging in the shed. The mother, Blanche Palfrey, said she had no sign that her daughter was suicidal. No immediate indication, according to the police, of alcohol or drugs. Now, she had said, after being convicted, the sentencing guidelines said that she faced anywhere from 4, 5, 6 years in prison. She was free while she awaited sentencing, which was due to come up July 24th, but she had said she was not going to go to prison. She told ABC last year when she released phone records that revealed some of her clients. She said, quote, I am sure as heck not going to be going to federal prison for one day, let alone, 4 to 8 years, because I'm shy about bringing in the deputy secretary of whatever. Not for a second. I'll bring every last one of them in if necessary. End quote. No, Deborah, you won't. I'll bring every last one of them in as if necessary, because I'm not going to go to prison to cover the ass of secretary of whatever. No, couldn't be. All right. I want to play for you two quick sound bites from Too Much Cappuccino Perino, and then coming back after the break, we're going to take a look at remembering the Iraq War's Pollyanna pundits. Yesterday, briefing, Doublespeak Dana got impatient with the TV reporter questioning the Pentagon's practice of putting shills on TV to spin administration lies about progress in Iraq. So here's the exchange between the reporter and Spinderella.
Over the last 6 years, the Pentagon conducted a secret operation designed to sell the war in Iraq and the war on terror to the American people. It recruited more than 75 ex-military officers, many with financial ties to the defense industry, provided them with talking points and an extraordinary degree of access not available to ordinary members of the press, including meetings with the Secretary of Defense, and it got them hired as supposedly independent military analysts by every U.S. television network. One of its participants described
the program. Question.
One of its participants described the program as psyops on steroids, and others said
is
that
your opinion?
If they, I'm describing the
what's
program.
What's your question?
Others said that if they departed from the Pentagon's talking points, their access was cut off. And my question is, did the White House know about and approve of this operation?
Look, I didn't know. I think that you guys should take a step back and look at this operation. Look, DOD has made a decision. They've decided to stop this program. But I would say that one of the things that we try to do in the administration is get information out to a variety of people, so that everybody else can call them and ask their opinion about something.
Ah.
And I don't think that that should be against the law.
Oh.
And I think that it's absolutely appropriate to provide information to people who are seeking it and are going to be providing their opinions on it. It doesn't necessarily mean that all of those military analysts ever agreed with the administration.
Oh.
I think you can go back and look and think that a lot of their analysis was pretty tough on the administration. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't talk to people.
Wait a minute. One of the things that we try to do in this administration is to get information out to a variety of people so that everybody else can call them and ask their opinion about something, and I don't think that should be against the law. Dana, your cute little upturned nose is going to start growing and growing and growing. You know, Dana, when you lie, you go to hell. Now, after that smackdown about proven Pentagon propaganda, Helen Thomas got in this zinger about the fifth anniversary of Codpiece Gate. Well, we'll play it in a second. Codpiece Gate, I like that. Also known as Mission Accomplished, Banner Day. We'll have that for you right after the break. Helen Thomas asking, how does the president intend to commemorate Mission Accomplished after 5 years of death and destruction? All right, stick around. We'll play that for you when we come back. And then some comments by some of the war's biggest supporters in mainstream media. Oh, by the way, they're all white people. As it played out over the past couple of years, you're going to find this interesting. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
All right, 26 before the hour. Let's go back to yesterday's press briefing with Too Much Cappuccino Perino and Helen Thomas. In anticipating today's anniversary, fifth anniversary of Mission Accomplished and Bush. Coming off that jet fighter, bomber, whatever the hell it was, on the deck of the aircraft carrier with his genitals all bunched up in a wad so that people like Chris Matthews could just swoon. Helen Thomas wants to know what Mr. Bush is going to do. She wanted to know yesterday what Bush is going to do today.
President, intend to commemorate Mission Accomplished after 5 years of death and destruction.
The what you're referring to is the banner that ran that was aboard the ship 5 years ago. President Bush. Yes, I get. Yeah, no, I understand. You're talking. That's the anniversary of when that banner flew on that ship. But President Bush is well aware that the banner should have been much more specific and said, "Mission accomplished for these sailors who are on this ship." On their mission, and we have certainly paid a price for not being more specific on that banner. And I recognize that the media is going to play this up again tomorrow, as they do every single year.
Oh, Dana! Oh, pussycat! Really? You're concerned the media is going to play it up? They won't play it up that much. Just a couple of renegades that haven't taken the blue pill yet. Poor Bush. Poor Bush. He's been so harmed. He's paid such a price for that darned old banner. Let's not talk about the maimed and murdered Iraqis and damaged and dead U.S. troops. Bush has suffered so much, right, Dana? Oh, you poor unconscious person, you. Oh, my God. We're not going to miss you. Tony Snow was fun. Ari Fleischer was, you know, your typical Mossad agent who goes to work in the U.S. government. Who else was there? The Quacker. Huh? Scott McClellan. Yeah, the simple Scotty. But you, Dana, you are truly unique when you popped out of the mold, they broke it, right? A few weeks after the invasion of Iraq began, Fox News Channel and famous American Nazi Brit Hume delivered a scathing speech criticizing the media's supposedly pessimistic assessment of the Iraq War. And FAIR.org has put together a collection here of comments from some of the mainstream media pundits. This was from April 25th, 04. When Brit Hume said, in a speech, quote, "The majority of the American media who were in a position to comment upon the progress of the war in the early going, and even after that, got it wrong. They didn't just get it a little wrong, they got it completely wrong." Now, Hume was correct, but he was talking exactly opposite from what the truth was. No. We didn't get it wrong, you dumb bastard. We got it exactly right. Days or weeks into that war, commentators and reporters made premature declarations of victory, predictions about lasting political effects, and called on the critics of the war to apologize. And that's what Britt Hume is talking about. Now, around the same time as Hume's speech, right-wing neo-Nazi columnist Cal Thomas declared, this was on April 16, 03, quote, all of the printed and voiced prophecies should be saved in an archive. When these false prophets again appear, they can be reminded of the error of their previous ways and at least be offered an opportunity to recant and repent. Otherwise, they will return to us in another situation where their expertise will be acknowledged or taken for granted, but their credibility will be lacking, end quote. And of course, he's talking about the critics of Bush's invasion. Cal, I'll challenge you, you Nazi. Come on, step out. Here's your opportunity to recant or repent. Huh? You right-wing pissant. You want to do it, Cal? Come on. No? Huh? Can't hear me? Oh. Okay. Los Angeles Times headline, April 10th, 03. Iraq is all but won. Now what? CBS reporter Joey Chen, another little right-winger that came out of CNN, says on May 4th, 03, quote, now that the combat phase of the war in Iraq is officially over, what begins is a debate throughout the entire U.S. government over America's unrivaled power and how best to use it. Oh, excuse me, am I on camera? Okay. NPR's Bob Edwards, April 28th, 03, quote, Congress returns to Washington this week to a world very different from the one members left 2 weeks ago. The war in Iraq is essentially over, and domestic issues are regaining attention. End quote. Fox News Channel's Tony Snow, April 13th, 03. Tommy Franks, quote, Tommy Franks and the coalition forces have demonstrated the old axiom that boldness on the battlefront, on the battlefield, produces swift and relatively bloodless victory. The three-week swing through Iraq has utterly shattered skeptics' complaints. That's Tony Snow. End quote. Three-week swing through Iraq. Three-week swing. You miserable son of a bitch. When you are sucking in your last breath because you have been eaten alive by colon cancer, are you going to consider that for all the Iraqi civilians butchered in this event, we're not seeing it as a three-week swing through their country? You filthy pig. Huh? A three-week swing. How about the famous photo, famous, of the little girl with her limbs blown off? Eh, what you say, Tony? Charles Krauthammer, April 19th, 03, quote, the only people who think this wasn't a victory are Upper West Side liberals and a few people here in Washington. Really? Newsweek's Howard Feynman, MSNBC, May 7th, 03, quote, we had controversial wars that divided the country. This war united the country and brought the military back, end quote. Howard Feynman. Washington Post reporter Cece Connolly appearing on Fox News Channel on April 9th, 03, discussing the pulling down of Saddam Hussein's statue in Baghdad. An event later revealed to have been a U.S. military psyops operation. Here's what Cece had to say, quote, oh, it was breathtaking. I mean, I was almost starting to think that we had become inured to everything that we'd seen of this war of the past 3 weeks. All this sort of, you know, saturation. And finally, when we saw that it was such a just, true, genuine expression, it was reminiscent, I think, of the fall of the Berlin Wall. And just sort of that pure emotional expression, not choreographed, not stage managed, the way so many things are these days seem to be. It was really breathtaking, end quote. Cece Connolly, you want to step up and eat some crow, you dumbass? PBS's Gwen Ifill. Oh, I said they were all white. My mistake. PBS's Gwen Ifill, May 2nd, 03, on George Bush's mission accomplished speech on the deck of that aircraft carrier. Quote, the war winds down, politics heats up, picture perfect. Part Spider-Man, part Tom Cruise, part Ronald Reagan. The president seizes the moment on an aircraft carrier in the Pacific. End quote. MSNBC's Chris Matthews, May 1st, 03. We're proud of our president. Americans love having a guy as president, a guy who has a little swagger, who's physical, who's not a complicated guy like Clinton or even like Dukakis or Mondale, all those guys, McGovern. They want a guy who's president. Women like a guy who's president. Check it out. The women like this war. I think we like having a hero as our president. It's simple. We're not like the Brits. End quote. Jesus Christ, Chris. Why don't you just get a room with George and have at it? Lou Dobbs on the same speech. He looked like an alternatively commander-in-chief, rock star, movie star, and one of the guys. End quote. Oh, Lou, you silly Nazi. Chris Matthews again, April 9th, 03. Why don't the damn Democrats give the president his day? He won today. He did well today. Chris Matthews speaking about Howard Dean on the same day. What's he going to talk about a year from now? The fact that the war went too well and it's over? I mean, don't these sort of things lose their... isn't there a fresh date on some of these debate points? Chris... CNN's Judy Woodruff, May 5th, 03. If image is everything, how can the Democratic presidential hopefuls compete with the president fresh from a war victory? Washington Post reporter Jeff Birnbaum on the Fox News Channel, May 2nd, 03, same day as Judy Woodruff's statement. Quote, it is amazing how thorough the victory in Iraq really was in the broadest context. And the silence, I think, is that it's clear that nobody can do anything about it. There isn't anybody who can stop him. The Democrats can't oppose, cannot oppose him politically. End quote. Now, of course, risking the fact that I'm stating the obvious, do you see why America is going straight to hell? Because these are the people who bring us the news. Well, there's more. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Obviously killing Americans, but they're killing a lot more Iraqis.
Oh, well, that's good. All right, we are taking a look at what Fair.org put together. Some of the statements made by America's punditocracy regarding the successful prosecution of the war in Iraq. It was all a success. Mission accomplished. Everything is fine. Alan Colmes, Fox News Channel's token liberal, on April 25th, 03, Alan Colmes said, quote, now that the war in Iraq is all but over, should the people in Hollywood who opposed the president admit they were wrong? Oh, Alan, you piece of human waste. Oh, God, how does it feel to be Sean Hannity's butt boy just forever? Huh? How does it feel? Ooh. MSNBC's Joe Scarborough, quote, this is from April 9th, 03. I doubt that the journalists in the New York Times and NPR or at ABC or at CNN are going to ever admit just how wrong their negative pronouncements were over the past 4 weeks. Oh, Joe, why don't you demand an investigation into the death of the woman who was found in your office down in the Florida Panhandle? You know, the one that, oh, never mind. You wouldn't do that, would you? Here's Joe again. All of these are Joe. Quote, I'm waiting to hear the words, I was wrong, from some of the world's most elite journalists, politicians, and Hollywood types. They always say Hollywood, don't they? I just wonder who's going to be the first elitist to show the character to say, hey, America, guess what? I was wrong. Maybe the White House will get an apology. First from the New York Times' Maureen Dowd. Now, Miss Dowd mocked the morality of this war. He actually said that. And then Scarborough goes on, do y'all remember Scott Ritter? You know, the former chief UN weapons inspector who played chief stooge for Saddam Hussein? Well, Mr. Ritter actually told a French radio network that, quote, the United States is going to leave Baghdad with its tail between its legs defeated, end quote. Sorry, Scott, I think you've been chasing the wrong tail again. Joe, you couldn't provide the spit to polish Scott Ritter's combat boots. Here's Scarborough again, all on April 10th. Maybe disgraced commentators and politicians alike, like Daschle, Jimmy Carter, Dennis Kucinich, and all those others, will step forward tonight and show the content of their character by simply admitting what we already know, that their wartime predictions were arrogant, they were misguided, and they were dead wrong. Maybe, just maybe, these self-anointed critics will learn from their mistakes, but I doubt it. After all, we don't call them elitists for nothing. End quote. Now, this is why if we pay attention to network news or what passes for network or cable news, and so many Americans do, this is why we cannot make a decision. This is why Nancy Pelosi won't allow impeachment proceedings to go forward. This is why the country is going right into hell. It's because of this. Because of this. Now, I'm leaving out the pig man. I'm leaving out Sean Hannity. They flooded the airwaves all day, every day, with the worst kind of propaganda. Dick Morris, Fox News Channel, April 9th, 03. Over the next couple of weeks, when we find the chemical weapons this guy was amassing, the fact that this war was attacked by the left, and so the right was so vindicated, I think really means that the left is going to have to hang its head for three or four more years. Really? Dick? New York Times reporter David Carr, April 16th, 03. Quote, this has been a tough war for commentators on the American left. To hope for defeat meant cheering for Saddam Hussein. To hope for victory meant cheering for President Bush. The toppling of Mr. Hussein, or at least a statue of him, has made their arguments even harder to defend. Liberal writers for ideologically driven magazines like The Nation, and for less overtly political ones like The New Yorker, did not predict a defeat, but the terrible consequences many warned of have not happened. Now liberal commentators must address the victory at hand and confront an ascendant conservative juggernaut that asserts United States might can set the world right. End quote. Fox News Channel's Morton Kondracki, April 12th, 03, quote, well, the hot story of the week is victory. The Tommy Franks, Don Rumsfeld battle plan, war plan worked brilliantly. A three-week war with mercifully few American deaths or rocky civilian deaths. There's a lot of work yet to do, but all the naysayers have been humiliated so far. The final word on this is hooray. CNN's Lou Dobbs, April 14th, 03, quote, some journalists, in my judgment, just can't stand success, especially a few liberal columnists in newspapers and a few Arab reporters. End quote. Back to Joe Scarborough, May 30th, 03 on MSNBC. Quote, Sean Penn is at it again. The Hollywood star takes out a full-page ad in the New York Times bashing George Bush. Apparently he still hasn't figured out we won the war. End quote. And these sons of bitches all are still in positions of media power. Every single one of them. And there's more that I'll share with you after the break. You've got to hear it all. But has any one of these filthy piglets come forward and said, not only was everything they said an absolute gutter lie, but they themselves brought dishonor on this country, brought absolute murderous disrespect for our soldiers who are on now their third and fourth deployment. I would like to see any one of these sons of bitches take up a weapon, put on a uniform. Come on, Joe Scarborough, you can do it. Put your ass in downtown Baghdad. You and Alan Combs and Lou Dobbs. Come on, boys, suit up. Chris Matthews, we'll even give you a codpiece so you'll feel close to your president. Come on, boys, let's go kick some Arab ass. You ready? Huh? Line forms over here. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. We are, courtesy of fair.org, we are going over some of the comments made by major media figures subsequent to Bush's invasion of Iraq and his declaration 5 years ago of, major combat operations in Iraq are ended. America and its allies have prevailed. The mission accomplished speech when George got to walk across the deck of an aircraft carrier with his genitals bent, bunched up because of the either the parachute or the life raft or life jacket that he was wearing, the restraints. It almost drove Chris Matthews over the edge when he saw that. So back to some of the comments from some of these thugs. Fox News Channel, we already did that one, Alan Combs. Okay, here we are. This is from Christopher Hitchens, everybody's favorite intellectual. What is he, liberal? I don't know what he is. Excuse me. This was cited in the Observer of the UK, April 30th, 03. Quote, "This will be no war. There will be a fairly brief and ruthless military intervention. The president will give an order. The attack will be rapid, accurate, and dazzling. It will be greeted by the majority of the Iraqi people as an emancipation, and I say, bring it on." Did you arm yourself, Chris, and go join in the fun and frivolity? You didn't? Oh. Fox News Channel's Bill O'Reilly, quote, "I will bet you the best dinner in the Gaslight District of San Diego that military action will not last more than a week. Are you willing to take that wager?" That was January 29th, 03. February 10th, 03, Bill O'Reilly, quote, "It won't take weeks. You know that, Professor. Our military machine will crush Iraq in a matter of days, and there's no question that it will," end quote. Same day, Bill O'Reilly, quote, "There's no way. There's absolutely no way. They may bomb for a matter of weeks, try to soften them up as they did in Afghanistan, but once the United States and Britain unleash, it's maybe ours. They're going to fold like that." End quote. NBC reporter Fred Francis on the Chris Matthews Show, April 13th, 03, quote, "He, Saddam Hussein, actually thought that he could stop us and win the debate worldwide, but he didn't. He didn't bargain on a 2 or 3 week war. I actually thought it would be less than 2 weeks." NPR's Mara Liasson, quote, where there was a debate about whether or not Iraq had these weapons of mass destruction and whether we can find it, dot, 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 Brit Hume responding, no, there wasn't. Nobody seriously argued that he didn't have them beforehand. Nobody. What? NPR's Mara Liasson, where there was a debate about whether or not Iraq had these weapons of mass destruction and whether we can find it, Brit Hume, no, no, there was no debate. Nobody seriously argued that he didn't have them beforehand. Nobody. Once again, I would love to see Scott Ritter, now that I've met him and hung out with him a bit, I'd like to see Scott Ritter walk into Fox News Channel, grab somebody like Brit Hume by his throat and lift him about 4 feet off the ground and just say, shut up, don't ever talk again. Cal Thomas, February 12th, 03, right-wing neo-Nazi syndicated columnist. Cal Thomas spoke, a quote, speaking to the UN Security Council last week, Secretary of State Colin Powell made so strong a case that Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein is in material breach of UN resolutions that only the duped, the dumb, and the desperate could ignore it. End quote. Really, Cal? My goodness. Newsweek, March 17th, 03. Quote, Saddam could decide to take Baghdad with him. One Arab intelligence officer interviewed by Newsweek spoke of the green mushroom over Baghdad, the modern-day caliph bidding a grotesque biochem farewell to the land of the living on, alongside thousands of his subjects, as well as his enemies. Saddam wants to be remembered, you see. He has the means and the demonic imagination. It is up to U.S. armed forces to stop him before he can achieve notoriety for all time. End quote. Green mushroom? I think you've been eating green mushrooms. MSNBC reporter Barb Arnott, April 9th, 03, on the Chris Matthews Show. Chris, more than anything else, real vindication for the administration. One, credible evidence of weapons of mass destruction. Two, you know what? There were a lot of terrorists here, really bad guys. I saw them. End quote. April 10th, 03, New York Times columnist William Sapphire at the time, quote, even in the flush of triumph, doubts will be raised. Where are the supplies of germs and poison gas and plans for nukes to justify preemption? Well, freed scientists will lead us to caches no inspectors could find. What about remaining danger from Ba'athist torturers and war criminals forming pockets of resistance and plotting vengeance? Well, their death wish is our command. Ha ha. And with the exception of Sapphire, who has been put out to pasture, or is it stud, every one of these thugs, these creeps, are still operating full bore in American media. Nothing has changed to stop them. Their bosses have not called them on the carpet and said, son of a bitch, were you wrong? None of them, especially the ones who mocked those of us on the left. Not one of those who mocked us has stepped out and said, okay, all those things I've said about the lefties, the Hollywood crowd, the crazy people, I'm sorry, I was just completely wrong. It was me who's crazy. Not one of them. This is the amazing thing about Nazis, whether they're American or Spanish or Italian or German or Japanese, it doesn't make any difference. Fascists, what they do is state their case. When their case blows up in their faces, they continue to state the case over and over and over again as if nothing happened. This is what American fascists do. You hear it every single day. No matter what the truth is, maintain the lie. Now, if that's not directly out of Joseph Goebbels' playbook, then what is? And some of you think I'm over the top for calling them American fascists. You have to be kidding me. You have to be kidding me. Man. And Lou Dobbs, who has become... fancies himself now as a populist. I'm waiting for the time When Lou Dobbs' wife divorces him, she is Hispanic, as are her parents. They came here from some place that Lou Dobbs would like to declare a toxic waste dump and keep all of subsequent people who want to come here from coming here. Oh, but Mike, Lou Dobbs' in-laws were legal. And I'm just wondering how much longer Lou Dobbs' wife will continue to listen to this pasty-faced white man spouting his racist, anti-immigrant garbage. But there he was 5 years ago, right in the fray, old Lou Dobbs, telling everybody, along with Alan Combs and Morton Kondracki and Charles Krauthammer and all these people, how wrong those of us who said, this is an abomination, this is not going to work, we are going to be pushed against the wall, we've got to leave. Remember what these rotten bastards said about us? Will one of them step out now and say, I was wrong?
Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
It's about 21 past the hour. It's just astonishing what the pro-war punditocracy, however the hell you say it in this country, tried to sell us on the whole bloody adventure. It's the same way the Israel-Palestine situation is sold to us every single day when the attempt is made to sell it to us at all. It's those filthy Palestinians, those dirty terrorists, firing their little toy rockets into South Israel. It's just astonishing. When American media decides on a point of view collectively, and it is always collectively. There's no such thing as innovation or creative thought or originality in American media. There just isn't. When a decision is made, the story becomes cast in concrete. That's the end of it. No debate, no debate, no debate. The situation of the U.S. occupation in Iraq, the situation of the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories, these are two stories that have been so brutally misreported by American media. The most honest reporting about the brutal occupation of the Palestinian territories comes from Israeli newspapers like Haaretz or some of the writers who are the peace groups in Israel who understand fully what their corrupt, murderous government is doing to the Palestinians. It's some of the best writing about U.S. corruption in Iraq is coming from British journalists. Now, why is that? Huh? Why is that? American journalists are lying, paid-off sons of bitches who will not tell the truth about the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories, nor will they tell the truth about the American occupation of Iraq. It will not happen. And you got to ask yourself why. What is it about either occupation that is so threatening to us, the American people, that if we knew the truth, we would do something? What? It's one thing to be involved in the active production of propaganda during, oh, I don't know, pick a time. World War II. There you go. That's one thing. When the U.S. was riddled with German and Italian and, well, not Japanese spies, because we locked all them up. They were easy to see. Ha ha! It's one thing to get involved in government/media propaganda in a situation like that. Isn't it something else again to have wall-to-wall propaganda on the two festering situations that is eating the United States alive? Our unbridled support of Israel in its occupation of the Palestinian territories, and our insane insistence that we continue to do war against Iraq, Afghanistan, and soon Iran. Who decides the policies that say there are four people we need to capture because they organized an attack on this country that was highly successful 7 years ago? Let's go get them. And in the process, let's murder a million or two Muslims. Who comes up with that? Who comes up with that? But of course, our objective is not to capture and execute or torture or convert to Christianity four or five renegade terrorists. That's not our objective at all. So what is our objective? Depends on who you listen to, I guess, right? Huh? You think? If you believe the official story that 19 hijackers who are now, if you believe the official story, all dead, I mean, prima facie evidence of their death is the fact that the planes they were on vaporized. Therefore, they're dead. 15 of whom came from Saudi Arabia. If you believe that official story and you want to go after the people who put it together and you're not willing to find those people in the CIA or the Mossad or MI6 or wherever they were, if you really want to pursue the crazed Arab story, okay, then why murder a million Iraqi civilians? Why murder tens of thousands of Afghan civilians? What is going on? Oh, my. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, Uncle Mike's Story Corner. And it's written by Johan Hari, H-A-R-I, major award-winning reporter who's been in every war zone on Earth. He writes for The Independent of the UK. And it's entitled, Israel is Suppressing a Secret It Must Face. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Stop this madness. Stop the killing. Stop the suffering. And the pain. So I don't want to be a soldier. I don't want to kill and maim another mother's son or daughter.
Son or daughter.
George Bush's war.
It's about 25 before the hour. Okay, are you ready for another episode of Uncle Mike's Story Corner? Everybody comfy? You got your jammies on? Okay. Gather around. It's still cold enough out to have a glass of hot chocolate, isn't it? Or a cup, I should say. Uncle Mike gets a little squirrely sometimes. Tonight's Story Corner comes courtesy of Johan Hari, who is a major award-winning journalist. He works for, among other publications, or his work has been published in, among other publications, Independent of the UK. And this is his story. It is subtitled, How Did a Jewish State Founded 60 Years Ago End Up Throwing Filth at Cowering Palestinians? When you hit your 60th birthday, most of you will guzzle down your hormone replacement therapy with a glass of champagne and wonder if you have become everything you dreamed of in your youth. In a few weeks, the State of Israel is going to have that hangover. She will look in the mirror and think, I have a sore back, rickety knees, and a gun at my waist, but I'm still standing. Yet somewhere, she will know she is suppressing an old secret she has to face. I would love to be able to crash the birthday party with words of assurance. Israel has given us great novelists like Amos Oz and A.B. Yehoshua, great filmmakers like Joseph Cedar, great scientific research into Alzheimer's, and great dissident journalists like Amira Haas, Tom Segev, and Gideon Levy to expose her own crimes. She has provided the one lonely spot in the Middle East where gay people are not hounded and hanged, and where women can approach equality. But I can't do it. Whenever I try to mouth these words, a remembered smell fills my nostrils. It is the smell of human excrement. Across the occupied West Bank, raw, untreated sewage is pumped every day out of the Jewish settlements, along large metal pipes, straight onto Palestinian land. From there, it can enter the groundwater and the reservoirs and become a poison. Standing near one of these long, stinking, brown and yellow rivers of waste recently, the local chief medical officer, Dr. Bassam Saeed Nadi, explained to me, quote, recently there were very heavy rains, and the excrement started to flow into the reservoir that provides water for this whole area. I knew that if we didn't act, people would die. We had to alert everyone not to drink the water for over a week and distribute bottles. We were lucky it was spotted. Next time... He shook his head in fear. This is no freak. A 2004 report by Friends of the Earth found that only 6% of Israeli settlements adequately treat their sewage. Meanwhile, in order to punish the population of Gaza for voting the wrong way, the Israeli army is not allowing past the checkpoints any replacements for the pipes and cement needed to keep the sewage system working. The result? Vast, stagnant pools of waste are being held within fragile dikes across the strip and rotting. Last March, one of them burst, drowning a 9-month-old baby and his elderly grandmother in a tsunami of human waste. The Center on Housing Rights warns that one heavy rainfall could send 1.5 million cubic meters of feces flowing all over Gaza, causing what it calls, quote, a humanitarian and environmental disaster of epic proportions, end quote. How did it come to this? How did a Jewish state founded 60 years ago with a promise to be, quote, a light unto the nations, end quote, end up flinging its filth at a cowering Palestinian population? The beginnings of an answer lie in the secret Israel has known and suppressed all these years. Even now, can we describe what happened 60 years ago honestly and unhysterically? The Jews who arrived in Palestine throughout the 20th century did not come because they were cruel people who wanted to snuff out Arabs to persecute. No. They came because they were running for their lives from a genocidal European anti-Semitism that was soon to slaughter 6 million of their sisters and their sons. They convinced themselves that Palestine was, quote, a land without people for a people without land, end quote. I desperately wish this dream had been true. You can see traces of what might have been in Tel Aviv, a city that really was built on empty sand dunes, but most of Palestine was not empty. It was already inhabited by people who loved the land and saw it as theirs. They were completely innocent of the long, hellish crimes against the Jews. When it became clear these Palestinians would not welcome becoming a minority in someone else's country, darker plans were drawn up. Israel's first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion, wrote in 1937, quote, the Arabs will have to go, but one needs an opportune moment for making it happen, such as a war, end quote. So for when the moment arrived, he helped draw up Plan Dalit. It was, as Israeli historian Ilan Papp puts it, quote, a detailed description for the methods to be used to forcibly evict the people, large-scale intimidation and laying siege to and bombarding population centers, end quote. In 1948, before the Arab armies invaded, this began to be implemented. Some 800,000 people were ethnically cleansed, and Israel was built on the ruins. The people who ask angrily why the Palestinians keep longing for their own land should imagine an English version of this story. How would we react if the 30 million stateless persecuted Kurds in the world sent armies and settlers into this country to seize everything in England below Leeds and swiftly established a free Kurdistan from which we were expelled? Wouldn't we forever, for our children, long forever for our children to return to Cornwall and Devon and London? Would it take us only 40 years to compromise and offer to settle for just 22% of the land that we had? If we are not going to be endlessly banging our heads against history, the Middle East needs to excavate 1948 and seek a solution. Any peace deal, even one where Israel dismantled the wall and agreed to return to the 1967 borders, tends to crumble on this issue. The Israelis say, if we let all 3 million come back, we will be outnumbered by Palestinians even within the 1967 borders, so Israel would be voted out of existence. But the Palestinians reply, if we don't have an acknowledgement of the catastrophe and our right under international law to the land our grandfathers fled, how can we move on? It seemed like an intractable problem. Until 2 years ago, the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research conducted the first study of the Palestinian diaspora desires. They found that only 10%, around 300,000 people, want to return to Israel proper. Israel can't accept that many and compensate the rest without even enduring much pain. But there has always been a strain of Israeli society that preferred violently settling its own borders on its own terms to talk and compromise. This weekend, the elected Hamas government offered a 6-month truce that could have led to talks. The Israeli government responded within hours by blowing up a senior Hamas leader and killing a 14-year-old girl. Perhaps Hamas's proposals are a con. Perhaps all the Arab states are lying too when they offer Israel full recognition in exchange for a rollback to the 1967 borders. But isn't it a good idea to find out? Israel, as she gazes at her gray hairs and discreetly ignores the smell of her own stale excrement pumped across Palestine, needs to ask what kind of a country she wants to be in the next 60 years. Another episode of Uncle Mike's Story Corner. This one from Johan Hari, writing in the Independent of the United Kingdom. So until next time, kiddies, the music stops. All right, let's do some calls. Tim is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLA. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm doing fine. Thank you. Thank you very much. You know what? I was listening to the show earlier, and then you were talking. Remember when you had the recording of Dana Perino?
Yes.
Bubblehead. She said something that was interesting. Actually, the comments that the reporter asked regarding how ex-military officers were used getting talking points from the Pentagon.
Yes.
That were getting paid at the same time.
Right.
And you know, I guess she got really upset about that. And the question he asked was, what was the question? If the White House had approved of this, then Dana said, you know, I guess DOD had made a decision and they decided to stop this program. Then in the second paragraph, she said, I don't think that that should be against the law.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the White House and the Department of Defense is actually breaking the law.
Well, I don't know what law they would be breaking, Tim. I just know that anything that comes out of Dana Perino's mouth, like anything that comes out of the mouths of any of the Bush crime family people, is a lie. It doesn't make any difference if they are directly related to the Bush crime family or just hired whores. No offense to sex workers. We'll be back. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate you checking in.
The nightmare lasted 6 long years, remember. The world drowned in a bloody tide of war and death and genocide. 57 million died, remember. It's happening again. It's happening again.
Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk, and you talk that talk.
10 before the hour.
Knocks me out off of my
thanks feet. To the crew. Responsible for this madness tonight, Ian Huff, engineer of the program, Billy Foster, our technical director, Ben Birch, is the podcast manager. Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher, Kristen Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Bridget Wolf, our writer in residence, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, and Catherine Beggs, the executive producer. And if I haven't mentioned it lately, hey, become a Nova M founding member. You get all sorts of rewards for doing that. And plus you can get some Malloy t-shirts and things and then hang them in your room and throw darts at them. And by the way, it's now easier than ever to thank Nova M sponsors. If you go to NovaMradio.com, simply click on the sponsor directory at NovaMradio.com and you've got an email address. They'd love to hear from you. The madness involving Jeremiah Wright is apparently endless. Now, Northwestern University has withdrawn its offer of an honorary degree to Obama's former pastor. A university official says the school had offered Reverend Jeremiah Wright an honorary doctorate of sacred theology degree. But the Vice President for University Relations, Alan Cubbage, now says the offer has been rescinded because of the controversy surrounding Wright. He also says the school wants, quote, to ensure that the celebratory character of commencement was not affected, would not be affected, end quote. Well, the way to handle that, Mr. Cubbage, is to award Reverend Wright his honorary doctorate some day other than Commencement Day. Wouldn't that make sense to you? Huh? What does it cost to go to Northwestern? $60,000 a year? And you can't figure that out on your own, Alan? So now they're going to withdraw an honorary doctorate of sacred theology degree. What did Jeremiah Wright do that brings dishonor to himself and his honorary degree? This is, you see, you people sometimes, some of you think, I hate to say you people, sounds like Rush Limbaugh. A lot of people listen to this program sometimes really do think I go over the top, especially on the white person thing or the Israeli-Palestinian thing or the torture thing. Well, not the torture thing, but especially on the white people thing. I mean, you really do. I get the emails, you know, I do get them. Malloy, you're a race traitor. Oh, bite me. You know, that is so unimpressive when you write stuff like that. It really is. Get original. If you're going to give me insults, get original, please. But here it is once again. Here it is once again. The white people at Northwestern have said, oh, well then, no honorary degree for you, Reverend Negro. Oh, I'm sorry, Reverend Wright. You be too scary, Reverend. We don't know how to handle this. Whoa! You're talking about America deserves some of the hell coming on it because of its foreign policy and its global terrorism. Well, Reverend, you may be right, but we can't talk about that. This is Northwestern. Do you know how much money we get from the U.S. government for projects involved in working up the math on weapons of mass destruction? This is Northwestern University. We are like most universities in the United States. We are heavily subsidized by the military-industrial complex in this country, not to mention the Defense Department itself. Sorry, Rev. No honorary degree for you. Ha ha. These sons of bitches. I have a friend who graduated from Northwestern School of Journalism. Gary lives in L.A. Maybe listening tonight. Hi, Gary. But and he's a liberal Jew. So I wonder how Gary, if you're listening, call me when the show is over. I wonder how Gary feels about this, about his alma mater taking away. I know how he feels about it because I've known Gary since the 70s. White people are terrified to confront the truth about race relations in this country. And we are so scared. We are so scared to really confront it. Most of us. I mean, just like there are peace groups inside of Israel working to ameliorate the torture and the apartheid attitudes being dumped on the Palestinians, there are white people in this country who are genuinely concerned and have been for centuries about righting the wrongs of slavery and Jim Crowism and all this racial horror. Yeah, they do exist, these groups, these individuals. But for the most part, in this country, white people still haven't figured out how to relate to people of color, especially not people of African descent, or as we call them, African Americans. And we are still eaten up, white people are, for the most part, in this country, with two elemental emotions, guilt and fear. And as long as it's guilt and fear, we will do things like give John McCain a pass when his two spiritual advisors call for the absolute murder of a billion people in order to make Jesus come back. That will be given a pass. But a 20-year-old, a long-ago association of Barack Obama's at a church pastored by a minister who has some clear ideas on the crimes of America, not unlike the same message Dr. Martin Luther King had, that relationship will cause white people to go all wobbly. It's amazing. Just amazing. All right, well, we're about out of time, so I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Thanks for hanging out this evening. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NoVam Radio.